KUOW podcasts are made possible by listener support. Become a new or renewing member today at KUOW.org.
From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds. A top figure from the Bush White House is now working here in Seattle. Scott McClellan was the White House press secretary from July 2003 to April 2006. He was Bush's longest-serving press secretary. He left that post disillusioned and frustrated and went on to write a book about it called What Happened Inside the Bush White House and Washington's Culture of Deception. And now Scott McClellan has taken the job of vice president of communications right here at Seattle University. Thank you so much for coming by. I appreciate you taking the time.
It's great to be here and great to be back in the studio. I guess I was here a few years ago during my book tour.
To talk about that, yes. I want to find out how you got to the White House in the first place. I understand you were working for candidate George Bush as his traveling press secretary before the election, and you're also from Texas.
That's right. I'm born and raised in Austin, Texas, which I've been told, and I've noticed now that I'm here in Seattle, that there are a lot of similarities culturally between Austin and Seattle, and I think that's a great thing. Seattle is a wonderful place, and Austin's a wonderful place, too. But essentially, when I was finishing up college, I decided to get involved in statewide politics, or got involved in a statewide political campaign, and it just back in the, this was been 89-90 time period, and it just took off from there. And had a mother who was involved in politics at a very early age. She was a three-term mayor of Austin when I was very young, school board before that. She had started out as a public school teacher, and it just so happened I didn't have my path planned out after I was graduating from the University of Texas. I just got involved in Texas politics. The governor's office noticed me, called and asked if I'd be interested in coming over and working in the governor's office. This was back in late 98, before his last legislative session, and when he was gearing up to run for president. And of course, what attracted me to then Governor Bush at that point to go to work for him was that he was this governor who was known for reaching across the aisle and his bipartisan leadership. And certainly it was my hope that we would be able to bring that same sort of bipartisan leadership to D.C. and change things. But unfortunately, it didn't quite work out the way we had hoped.
What was it like working with him during that campaign? I'm sure you had a lot more one-on-one time with him than you would get a chance to have later on in the campaign, and certainly when he was president.
Sure. It was a bit of a whirlwind. You know, for 7-8 months there, I was the traveling press secretary. I'd started out on the campaign as a deputy press secretary, and then as we were wrapping up the primary and saw that he was going to win, and you get the larger charter plane to take all the press corps along with you, 100 or so journalists and sound people and camera people and others that travel with you throughout that general election campaign. It's an exciting time, but you're basically hopping from city to city, multiple cities here at the end. As we're in the final couple of weeks here of this current presidential election, I know what it's like hitting four cities in a day, and you're just going from event to event. And it's somewhat of an exciting time because you anticipate that election day is right around the corner and it's almost over. Of course, we learned that it wasn't over on election day back in 2000 when we all had to move to Florida for the next several weeks before that was finally decided.
And, of course, you got a taste of the national political press from serving in that capacity, too. What did you notice about them going from Texas to all of a sudden all the top political reporters in the country pelting you with questions?
Right. Well, it was certainly a learning experience during that time. A lot of those reporters that were covering us ended up covering us at the White House. So they were some of those relationships I started forming back during that campaign that I would later – that would later be of good benefit for me later when I became White House press secretary. And so you're just – under a much larger microscope, and everything you're saying, everything you're doing is much more carefully scrutinized and watched, and it's just more intense. It's not that it's different from what necessarily we were doing in Texas. It's just that many more reporters, that many more, or that much more intensity and scrutiny of what you're saying and doing.
Well, you must have done a good job on the campaign trail, because later you got to be the press secretary at the White House. In your book, you said you believed in George W. Bush's leadership and agenda for America, and you had confidence in his authenticity, integrity, and judgment. Could you give maybe an example of why you felt that strongly about him in the early days?
Well, you know, I really formed a close bond with him going back to our days in Texas together, even before I went to work for him when he was governor. I knew him not well, but I knew him. And then certainly working in the governor's office during that last legislative session before the campaign, we spent some good time together on the road. He's certainly someone that has a lot of personal charm. He is a very genuine person in his beliefs. course. Certainly there's some things where I think he made some decisions that were unwise. And I talk about that in the book, particularly in regards to Iraq. And I think that took us off track in a lot of ways initially. Certainly there's some other things that impacted his presidency and helped it veer off course even more so after that. But, I've been with President Bush when he would go and visit the families of the fallen or the wounded soldiers, whether it was at Walter Reed. I remember that one time walking in with him, following, I would pretty much shadow him and follow him around as he would walk in to visit the wounded. And I remember very vividly that one time he walked into this room at Walter Reed, and there was a young family sitting there on kind of a bench, I guess, or maybe it was a couple of chairs, but it was a sergeant who his whole head was wrapped in a bandage. You couldn't see his eyes, sitting next, his wife sitting next to him, and his 7-year-old son right there with him. And, you know, I watched the president walk in there, and of course, you didn't know if the sergeant was even knew what was going on around him, or if he could comprehend what was going on around him because of his traumatic head injury. And the president talked to his son about what a brave person his father was. And then right before he left, he bent down and very gently just kissed the sergeant on the top of his head, ever so gently, whispered in his ear, "God bless you." And the president turned around, walked out. And I remember looking in his eyes, and you could see just his eyes welling up. And you could see just, and then he didn't ever show it really publicly, but for a minute there, I could see that self-doubt kind of, you know, I'm the one who made the decision to send him into harm's way, and you know, a very natural human reaction. So I knew him on a very human level, and respect him for his sincerity and his genuine beliefs in what he was trying to accomplish.
You left the White House press secretary job in 2006, and then a couple of years later, you wrote a book that was the book that I mentioned, What Happened Inside the Bush White House and Washington's Culture of Deception, which was highly critical of a lot of things that went on at the White House. And you cited as your personal worst moment a daily White House briefing back in 2003. And you were asked about White House officials Karl Rove, Elliot Abrams, and Louis Libby, whether they had disclosed that Valerie Plame worked for the CIA. Those of us who can probably remember, that was a huge issue at the time.
Right.
You're not supposed to leak that kind of information. You told the press they had not. It turned out that Louis Libby was the source of the story. He was eventually convicted of perjury. Did you know that at the time when you were telling the press that?
No, and actually, I talk about this at length in the book because it was a very defining time for my days as press secretary. That was very early on back in 2003 when the investigation was launched by the Justice Department into the leaking of Valerie Plame's identity. And I had been put in a spot where, and I said, those individuals assured me they were not involved in this. Now, when it came to Scooter Libby, I had actually been essentially directed to the vice president, talked to the president, and said, you know, there are a lot of people focusing on him, and we need him to go out there and say that he wasn't involved. And I looked at our chief of staff when he told me that, and I said, well, let me talk to Scooter Libby, and I want to hear it directly from him, someone who I worked with every day there in the West Wing. And I talked to Scooter. I said, were you involved in this in any way? He assured me it was not. And I said, well, even though I felt uncomfortable going back and while an investigation was going on and talking about it, when someone that I didn't know long term, I'd worked with him for a few years at that point, but went out there. And so what I said was they assured me they were not involved in this. It turned out 2 years later that he and Karl Rove had actually been involved, whether it was directly with the ultimate report that led to her identity being revealed or not. They were certainly talking about her identity to individuals.
Yeah.
And when the press corps came back and heard about that, we were in a position where our counsel's office said, we can't comment on it. Hmm. And I told the press at that time, I look forward to talking about it when the investigation is over. And everybody in the White House thought, well, that's a great way to respond in a tough situation. And now some of them did not appreciate when I actually talked about it.
Sure.
In the book. And I thought the only way to talk about it was in the larger context of why did things veer off course?
Yeah. Well, you called that moment kind of your undoing as the president's chief spokesman, but probably you didn't realize it that day. When did you realize?
Well, I think at that day I knew it. Certainly I was put in a very bad spot because of misinformation that had been provided to me and that we were not able to correct at that point because we wanted to cooperate with the special prosecutor, at least a number of us did. Scooter, it turned out, was convicted for not cooperating with or misleading the grand jury and the FBI. But So it was a difficult time for me, and it was interesting. During that time, the ones who defended me the most publicly were White House reporters, David Gregory and others. When they were asked, when they were doing reports about it, they said, well, he's got a sterling reputation, and they said, you know, straight shooter. And that really, you know, meant a lot to me, because I couldn't go out there and in my position and do that. And I didn't expect anybody else to, but I don't think they were intentionally trying to do that. People were just asking, well, did he mislead us on intentionally, or did he know? And they said, no, we don't think he knew. And I didn't until it was revealed at that point.
Well, the White House press corps may have supported you, not so much the Bush White House. When the book came out, there was a spokesperson who told you, who said that you were a disgruntled employee, and this was kind of a result of that. What did that feel like to hear that?
I was disillusioned. That's what happened over those, starting with that period in 2005, when it started to become known that, well, these individuals had been involved in the leaking of classified information. I started to become disillusioned about things, and there were some other moments over the course of those final, essentially 10 months of my time as White House press secretary that made me even more disillusioned. And so I understand where people are coming from, former colleagues. A number of them are still good friends. Some of them I don't talk to anymore. But when people actually read the book, I think they see it for what it is, which is an honest account of the good and the bad and what happened to what, why did things veer off course and what can we learn from that? And that was really the purpose of the book, is how do we move beyond this permanent campaign culture, this hyper-partisan environment in Washington, D.C., and get back to focusing on getting things done on the big priorities.
Well, it's certainly gotten worse since then, don't you think?
I think so personally, and I think many people would agree with that. Unfortunately, Obama came into office. Essentially, you know, remember back when Governor Bush was running, he said, I'm a uniter, not a divider. I'm going to come in and change the tone in Washington. And that's what attracted me to him in the first place. Obama came in running for president saying, we're going to change the way Washington works. And it's been much, you know, you get in there and realize it's much more difficult than you expected. And unfortunately, it has to happen. Someday, I believe it will happen. A lot of people ask me, will it ever change? I think it will. I'm an optimistic guy. And I think particularly if we learn the lessons of where things went off course in our administration, in this administration, we can make that happen.
Scott McClellan, former White House press secretary, is my guest. He's here in Seattle now. He's recently taking a job as vice president of communications at Seattle University. What makes you optimistic? I mean, a lot of other people see no healing whatsoever, no matter who gets elected to the presidency in November.
Yeah, and I don't know when it will happen. I just know that there are enough people out there, a growing number of people out there that are ready for that kind of change. I mean, that's why Obama received such strong support back in 2008 when he was running for president. A lot of people really thought they bought into this promise that he's going to rise above the partisan fray and be a different kind of leader. And, it was the reason then President Bush enjoyed some good support early on in his presidency and did some bipartisan things before the Iraq War came along and things got more divisive.
Well, and you voted for Obama in 2008. Do you think that he did everything he could have done to fix that broken political culture in Washington, D.C.?
I don't know about everything that he could have done. I think he's tried in a lot of ways. I think it's been very difficult. You have this permanent campaign mentality in Washington where everybody's focused on the next election, and they're focusing on, well, how do I try to shape the media to our advantage for that next election instead of focusing on, well, we got some big problems here, like the upcoming sequestration battle and the going off the fiscal cliff potentially. And that's a huge issue that could really put our economy back into a recession for a period of time if they don't act on it. Mm-hmm. So these are serious issues. And trying to get beyond that hyper-partisan environment is difficult because everybody wants to pay you back for the last thing that happened to their party.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people, I'm sure you've heard them say, the president tried, but the Republicans from Jump Street were saying their primary goal was to make sure that he didn't get reelected. I think
both parties share in the blame. To what degree? I mean, that'd be an interesting study to look at. Certainly, there are certain periods where one party probably shares more of the blame than the others. But I would have hoped that there would have been a more willingness to work between the congressional leadership, particularly in the House, with President Obama, and it has been rare during his presidency.
As I mentioned, you voted for President Obama. Do you consider yourself a Republican today?
I consider myself an independent. You know, I grew up in a family that was very involved in politics and higher education. My grandfather taught at the University of Texas School of Law essentially his whole life, was dean there for 25 years. He used to say, it's not the dollars you make, it's the difference you make that matters most. And that was instilled in myself and my older brothers at an early age. And my mother, who started out as a public school teacher, went on to become mayor of Austin when I was very young, served three terms. And so we grew up kind of in a Democratic family. But a lot of Texans switched parties back in the 80s after President Reagan. And I kind of went along out of family loyalty as much as anything. But I consider myself as someone who looks at politics as a way to find compromise on the big priorities and a way to work across the aisle to get things done. And that's what politics is about, that it shouldn't be about holding to your ideological position just to try to outmaneuver the other side for the next election.
Are you spoiled for politics? Do you think you'll ever get involved in politics again, maybe here in Washington State?
I don't know. I politics is in my blood. It always has been, always will be. I certainly enjoy following it. I'm glad to be involved in higher education now at Seattle University, and where I feel like you can make just as much as a difference impacting the students that go there and all that it stands for. But, we'll see. I never say never.
Well, now that you've worked at the crucible of the White House and your will and your you've been tested and forged, now you're in the real hothouse at Seattle University as Vice President of Communications. It's really prepared you for that snake pit, I'm sure, of backstabbing at that university. But seriously, what are the kind of the challenges for Seattle University going forward?
Well, Seattle University, it's really risen to new levels of excellence over the past couple of decades, two, three decades, and it's growing. And what attracted me to Seattle University was not only its commitment to strong academics, but its commitment to really educating the whole person, and that the excellence with purpose was what I refer to it about. It's kind of that deeper education and looking for how do we impact it. The values of Seattle University align very closely with mine, for a commitment to diversity, a commitment to social justice, commitment to sustainability. These are all very important priorities for all of us, and students that go there get practical experience in those issues.
But the small liberal arts colleges like Seattle University are kind of under pressure in this higher education environment.
Well, that's true. It's a changing environment, yeah. And that's the fun aspect about it. It's the challenge of how do we continue to raise the visibility of a great university like Seattle University in this changing higher education environment, and what kind of model do we build going forward with online education and how that fits with a Jesuit education, which is really focused on the student, each and every student, and the small class sizes. This is a university that has been consistently in the top 10 in U.S. News and World Report rankings for the West over the last decade. It received the President's Award, the White House Award from the President for its Seattle University Youth Initiative, which is having a tremendous impact on the neighborhood just adjoining the campus there at Seattle University and the underserved students there.
Scott McClellan, thank you so much for coming by. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Scott McClellan, now a Vice President of Communications at Seattle University, former White House press secretary. And we'll be looking forward to seeing whether you pop up on any local campaigns in the political area. If it's really in your blood, you'll be back. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds.
Thanks for listening. The program you just heard was made possible by the financial support of our listeners. Support this program and others like it by making a pledge today at KUOW.org.